I don't know if you've ever thought to yourself that it would be really good to be able to make a difference in this world. I don't know whether you've ever thought whether you would like to be what we might call this morning a difference maker. And maybe think of it like this, a few examples. For example, nobody wants to be picked for a sports team and then have to sit on the bench. Nobody gives a gift or a present to someone and hopes that it's never opened. Nobody devotes years and years of service to their job and then hopes that when they retire, no one will notice. No one dreams of dying and then having an unattended funeral. No one hopes that they will very quickly and easily be forgotten by those who knew them. You see, in our hearts, all of us want to make a difference. We want to leave the world a little bit changed, and when it's time to go, we really, really want someone to say, my life's a little bit richer, my world's a little bit bigger, my faith's a little bit stronger, I'm a better person because he or she walked this planet for a little while. She made a difference. He changed my life. See, we don't really, in our hearts, want just to be space takers. We don't want to be people who just accumulate things while we're here and build up our CVs. We want to be difference makers, people who make a difference. And that desire to make a difference is not a bad thing. It's one of those important things about you. You were made by God to want to make a difference. You were made by God to count, to want to matter. Unfortunately, this all gets messed up by sin and ego sometimes, but we were created by God to make a difference. I'm sure when you came in this morning, you thought, what is going on? I mean, takeaway or something here. You got a wee thing of salt. Hope you all got a wee packet of salt when you come in. Hopefully you did. And just hold on to it for a while, if you would. And if you're visiting this morning, maybe you're wondering, is this some kind of weird Presbyterian thing? Do they give out a different condiment every week? We don't actually, but we'll come to that later on. And we've all been given this salt this morning to help us remember what Jesus said one day to a group of his followers. He said this, you're the salt of the earth. You're the salt of the earth. And to understand what Jesus meant by this and means by this, we need to understand that salt played a very, very important role in Jesus' world, much more so than it does in ours. Now, if I asked you about salt this morning, you'd think of it, well, it's a food seasoning, isn't it? That's the one thing that comes to mind. Interestingly, well, maybe for me, maybe you think it's quite boring, but I think it's interesting. Only 6% of all manufactured salt goes into food. Only 6%. And apparently, I'm reliably informed that we use salt in more than 14,000 different ways, from the making of products which are varied, such as plastic and paper and glass and polyester and rubber and fertilizer, to things such as household bleach and soaps, detergents, dyes, and I could go on. The fact of the matter is we all use salt, whether we use it directly or indirectly. And maybe when you come in this morning, you were tempted to avoid this little packet of salt because it might cause health issues for you. Maybe you've got high blood pressure, or maybe you're on a low-sodium salt substitute diet, and salt isn't an option for you. But in the ancient world, it was a very, very different story. People discovered that there was something about salt that makes it useful as a preservative because it kept decay and corruption from setting in. And people discovered that there's something about salt that arrests that decay and corruption. And so it was almost to them, it was like some sort of magic potion. And they found that if they used salt, they could preserve food for times of famine. And therefore, salt literally contributed to an outcome of life or death in many situations. They also discovered that it was a purifying agent because it destroys bacteria. They discovered that it brings delight to people who are eating because there are special taste buds on our tongues that are designed to respond to salt. So because of all of these reasons and many more, salt became very, very highly prized in the ancient world. And I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but most of the ancient cities in Italy, for example Rome, they were founded on salt works. Romans used to pay the soldiers their wages in salt. Some of you might know the Latin word. You might remember Mrs. Irvine teaching you Latin in school as I do. And the Latin word for salt was sal, S-A-L. And that's where the word salary comes from, because salt was used to pay soldiers. And that's where we get the expression, he's worth his salt. And in a book called Salt, A World History, that sounds exciting, doesn't it? Isn't there a Christmas list? The author, Mark Herlansky, writes this. In the ancient world, salt was one of the most common factors that provoked and financed wars, believe it or not. People went to war over salt. Hard to believe. In fact, that's why we say when one country is attacked that it has been assaulted. Actually, I just made that one up, but it was pretty good, isn't it? You can't really understand what Jesus is saying here unless you understand that in the ancient world, salt was really, really highly prized. Plato said that salt was dear to the gods. Homer said that it was a divine substance. It was incredibly valuable stuff. In fact, it was currency. They went to war over it. Empires were built around it and upon it. And Jesus, when he's talking here to quite an undistinguished group of people, very simple people, followers of his, he comes to them and he says that God's plan to protect the world from decay and corruption, to purify it and bring whatever flavor and zest it's going to have, his plan for that is you. You are the salt of the earth. You. And if you're a follower of Jesus, then you're the salt of the earth this morning. You're the salt of the earth. That's what Jesus says. It's staggering. Staggering good news, because for most of us, that's hard to believe. We are the salt of the earth. But let's remember those words of Jesus. Those are words that he says to us. And things, something that he wants us to really grasp hold of this morning. We are the salt of the earth. But as we think about this, then there are implications, aren't there? There always have to be implications. And one of these is this, very simple. Salt does not exist for its own sake. Salt does not exist for its own sake. For example, when was the last time you went to someone's home for a meal and you said to that person, "Boys, this is great salt. Powerful. Dear, listen, we'll have to get this, some of this salt at home. It's just brilliant. We'll have to change brands." You don't do that. Salt doesn't call attention to itself either. That's the second thing to say. I used to think that all salt was the same, but apparently it's not. I found out that it's not. There's gourmet salt, there's rock salt, there's sea salt, there's seasoned salt, there's kosher salt. I can't even speak now, it's like a tongue twister. And there's many, many other kinds of salt as well. And salt, in some places, can even be a status symbol. But in Jesus' day, it wasn't like that. Salt was just salt. It didn't and doesn't call attention to itself. For example, nobody gets hungry and says, "Boys, I can't wait to get home and get a great bowl of salt into me. That would be powerful." You see, salt's calling, its reason, is to lose itself in something much more glorious than itself. And only then has it fulfilled its destiny. It's not about the salt itself. It was made for something else. It was made for another purpose. But if we're to be the salt of the earth, then we've got to get out of the packet. And if you do, God will use you to make a difference. I don't know how many of you read books by, or have read books by Philip Yancey. Fantastic Christian author. And in his book, Rumours of Another World, Yancey tells a true story that illustrates this very, very point. And it's a very powerful story. He writes in this book about a man called Ernest Gordon. You maybe have never heard of him before. Ernest Gordon was a British Army officer. He was captured by the Japanese in World War II. And he was put in a labour camp and was forced to build a railroad along with thousands of other men. Forced to build a railroad through the jungle in Thailand under terrible conditions. And I'm sure most of you will have heard of the film Bridge Over the River Kwai. And that was actually a true story. And that film was based on the setting in which this story happened, Bridge Over the River Kwai. And the prisoners that were building this bridge had to work every day in 120-degree heat. Their bodies were stung by insects and they were ravaged by disease. Their feet were bare and were just cut to shreds by stones. And if a prisoner appeared to be slacking off in any way, a guard would often beat him to death in full view of the other prisoners. Otherwise, they would be worked until they were too sick to go on. And after that, when they were no use anymore, they would be put into a shack that was nicknamed the Death House, where they would just lie down and roast until they died. And these conditions were so awful, so brutal, that 80,000 men died trying to build this railroad and this bridge. 393 corpses for every mile of track. This really happened. And the prisoners who survived were treated like animals. The strong would beat the weak for a few grains of rice. In fact, it was commonplace. The only thing that kept them alive was selfishness, self-preservation. It was a culture of death until one day, one man changed all of that. On this particular day, a group of men had finished work for the day, and one of the guards shouted to them that a shovel was missing, and he demanded to know who has taken this shovel. Nobody confessed, so he screamed that every single person in the work crew was going to be killed. He took his rifle, he aimed it at the first man, and was going to kill all of them when one of the enlisted men stepped forward and said, "I did it. I stole it." And the guards started to kick him and beat him, and the man just stood there. And other guards joined in, and they continued until they killed him. And that evening, when the tools were checked again, it was discovered they had made a mistake. No shovel was missing. No one had stolen anything. And that night, one of the prisoners remembered and writes about remembering a verse from the Bible. "Greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." And because of this, something happened in that camp. Prisoners started to treat the dying with respect. They started giving them funerals. They started marking the graves with a cross. And those who were stronger started to give their food to those who were weak. This man we mentioned earlier, Ernest Gordon, he himself had been struck down with fever. He had written his final letter to his parents, and he was waiting to die, having been laid out in the death house. Some of the men came in and carried him out. Other prisoners gave him their food, massaged his leg muscles, and cleaned him up. And you know, Ernest Gordon said that he hadn't thought about God for a very long time, but now he did. In this camp where people were dying by the thousands, they soon formed a little church, and Ernest Gordon became the unofficial pastor. They planted a garden, and in that garden they grew medicinal plants to help people who were sick. An amazing story. An incredible story. They even went on. They formed what they called the Jungle University, and they started teaching courses in history and philosophy and science in 9 different languages. What they did is they created an alternative culture to this culture of death. And at the end, these men became so transformed that when the liberating armies finally arrived, instead of taking revenge on their guards, they treated them with kindness and mercy and forgiveness. Ernest Gordon's own life was turned upside down, and much to his surprise, after the war, he ended up becoming a Presbyterian minister. What's the point? The point is that all of this started with a single person who made a difference. One man. And then it started to spread. And never underestimate the power of a difference maker, because one difference maker can change everything. And Jesus says to you and to me this morning that he wants us to make a difference. He says, "You are the salt of the earth." So you think about that, you know, it's important to think and remember, we're not here just to hold services. We're not here just to run organizations. We're not here just to meet together in little groups and feel safe and comfortable. As we said earlier, salt doesn't exist for its own sake. It doesn't exist for itself. It was made for another purpose. And we are here for a purpose as well. We are here to permeate a dying world in the way that salt permeates food. In the ancient world, salt was used to arrest or hinder the process of decay. And so too, Christians are given the task of arresting the decay of our world. You know, if you look back through history, you'll see that Christianity has had a profound positive effect on the world. Maybe the most dramatic impact that it's had was that before Christianity, the sacrifice, killing, and abandonment of children was common practice. Christianity has attached new value to human life. I could give you more examples. Hospitals, as we now know them, began through the influence of Christianity. The Red Cross was started by an evangelical Christian. The majority of our colleges and universities have Christian origins. They were founded by Christians for Christian purposes. The same could be said of orphanages and adoption agencies and facilities for the treatment of the insane, and so the list goes on and on and on. The dramatic impact of Christianity in our world. These were people who made a difference. And as Christians, we're called to have a positive impact on our world. As a moral preservative, we are here to keep the total corruption of our society at bay. How do we do that? Well, by opposing moral decay through our lives and through our words. But there's a worrying new trend today. There's a trend which says Christians are becoming too much like the society they live in. There's a research firm in America, and their raison d'etre, but their reason for being, is they specialize in studying the beliefs and behaviors of Christians in the 21st century. And they recently wrote this in a report. More and more, it is clear that the average Christian in the average church is almost indistinguishable from the rest of society. The fundamental moral and ethical difference that Christ can make in how we live is too often missing. And if we as Christians, if we lose the qualities of Christ-likeness that make us distinct and just become like the society around us, then we will no longer have a positive impact. In fact, we become more of a hindrance than we do a preservative. The following, I'm going to put up in a moment a list, and it's a description of 21st century hopes and expectations of actual people in an evangelical church in the USA, but it could just as easily be here in Northern Ireland. And following a survey of the church members, it was established that these things I'm going to put up are some of their top life priorities. Some of the things that these Christians really, really want from life. These are just some of them. There are many more. Top life priorities. Evangelical church. Be slim and physically fit and toned. Have great hair, makeup, and body shape. Be intelligent, articulate, and computer savvy. Be popular and sexually desirable without being promiscuous. Pursue all our gifts and talents to the point of mastery. Marry a Christian who has met all of these criteria. Have a beautiful home with walls painted this year's cool colours, clean and well decorated. Eat gourmet, low-fat, low-carb meals high in protein. Have beautiful landscaping in the garden. Have kids that are cute, healthy, smart, well-behaved, get into the right schools, escape all danger of peer culture, but still be well-liked and popular. Be humble and spiritual. Be rich without being snotty. Be confident but not abrasive. And this is the culture that we are up against. You know, it's just crazy. And to be honest, we too have become enslaved by it, haven't we? The danger is, the temptation is, that we become so enslaved by this culture that we live in that we just add a little bit of church on top of it. And we think that'll keep God happy. I'll do my church bit. And apart from that, I can strive after all of these other things in the same way that everybody else does. But Jesus comes along and he says, no. God never intended people. God never intended his people to live their lives in that kind of slavery. Because that's what it is. It is slavery. You're enslaved to the wants and the needs of the society all around you. Listen. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. Don't get sucked into that. Let me clarify something here. Jesus isn't giving a command here. He's not coming along and saying, you must be the salt. Or he doesn't say, try to be salt. Or he doesn't say, work hard to become salt. He's making a statement. He's making an observation. He's saying, you are the salt of the earth. We don't make the salt. At any time that anyone becomes so immersed in Jesus and his presence and his love and his goodness, any time someone is so immersed in him that they start to be liberated from the things that keep them enslaved to their culture, then they start to break free. And when people become free, we can see the positive effect of their saltiness. They literally start to make a difference for God. You're the salt of the earth, Jesus says. But then he goes on. You're the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its saltiness, how could it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled on by men. Why did Jesus say that? It all sounded so good up until that point. And this is the kind of thing that Jesus said that people felt very uncomfortable about. But it's true. It's true. And this is what our culture will try to do to us as Christians. It will try to get us to lose our saltiness. It will try to seduce you to serve it rather than serve God. It will try to seduce you to spend your life being too busy and too driven and too selfish and too preoccupied with your career and money and possessions and status. It will try to get you to compromise your principles and your beliefs. And if you don't do that well, you're narrow-minded and you're intolerant. And one other thing. It will try to make the church nothing more than some sort of stress management tool. Something to be used when times are tough or when it's necessary. But Jesus says, no, that is not the plan. You're the salt of the earth. You're to make a difference. You're to be countercultural in your attitude. I love the writing of John Ortberg, another great Christian author. John Ortberg says this. I have it on the screen if you can see it. He's also a minister, I should say, so he has experience with these things. I see people sometimes who go to church year after year and stay on the same crazy treadmill, overworked, overcommitted, overextended financially, still praying about the same stuff they were praying about 10 years ago. And the real reason underneath, if they're honest about it, is that they've never made the decision that they're going to die to the culture. So their prayers tend to be along this line. God, relieve me of all the stress and pressure that I'm under. But let me keep chasing after all the stuff that everybody else is chasing after. I wonder if there's anybody here today who needs to say, Lord, I really want to die to this culture. I want to be fully committed to you. And the good news is that when somebody in God's community is salty, it becomes contagious. When you become a difference maker, which is what happens because Jesus is at work, other people look at you and they are reminded that they want their lives to make a difference as well. That's what we all want, to make a difference. And may my prayer be, may your prayer be, God, I'm not going to be in slavery to this culture anymore. I'm going to make a difference. I want to be salt. When that happens, God begins to work and it is contagious. As I said earlier, we don't come here just to put on services and to run organizations, although those are very important and very, very helpful. But it's not what it's all about. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. You are it. You are God's plan to fight the decay and the corruption of this sorry and dark world and to make it winsome and attractive. That's it. That's God's plan. You are it. And what Jesus is doing this morning, he's saying to you and he's saying to me, I want you to pray the following. I want you to pray that you will die to your culture. He was looking for someone who will say, I will not live in slavery to its values and spend my life and all of my life and my energy according to it. And then just add on a little bit of church or a little bit of God. I will live as the salt of the earth. I will allow God to flow through me. I will be completely sold out to Jesus. I will make a difference. And one of the most amazing things when you read the Bible is a picture of the early church. These people who were the salt of the earth. And you see the people who were opposed to these Christians. And they thought they would stop it by persecuting them. So what did they do? They sent the leaders to prisons. What happened? The prisons started to get salty. So then they said, well, we'll stop the church by kicking these people out of Jerusalem. Well, go back to the book of Acts. The believers get thrown out of Jerusalem, and guess what happens? The whole region they go to, which was Asia Minor, it starts to get salty as well. And the idea that you could stop the early church by removing the Christians and spreading them all around the place, ironically, that was just getting the salt out of the salt shaker. That was just helping to spread the word. You're the salt of the earth. And all we have to do is to get out where the world is and let it start to permeate your home and your work and your neighborhood. And if you do, it will soon start to permeate somebody else's home, someone else's work, someone else's neighborhood. You're the salt of the earth. It doesn't matter this morning how young you are, how old you are. It doesn't matter what your title is or whether you've even got one. You're the salt of the earth. Do you have any idea what Jesus could do with a church that was full of people who say, all right, God, the number one priority of my life, what I want to do between now and my last day on earth is to make a difference for you. Everything I've got, my time, my gifts, whatever they are, my money, whatever I've got, it's yours. I'm fully sold out to you. And I'm not going to play this game. I'm not going to stay in the treadmill. It's time to live out my purpose for being here. Do you have any idea what difference that would make? What a challenge this is to me. If we say, I will lay down everything because I serve the biggest difference maker in the world. It's a matter of human history that Jesus Christ made a difference. Jesus Christ made an impact in this world like nobody else ever has. He was an innocent man who poured out his life as an offering for others. He started a community which we're part of, but that community is called the church, and it's still spreading all over the world today. So as I finish, here's what we're going to do. Here's what I'd like you to do. My job and your job for the next several days is to take this little packet of salt and put it in your pocket. And this is a visual reminder for us all to reflect on over the coming week. First of all, for those here who are not yet Christians, this is a reminder of God, of what God wants you to be. God wants you to follow Jesus. He wants you to give your life to him. And only then can you be the salt of the earth. At the moment, you're in the opposing camp. Reflect on that. Respond to that challenge. And finally, to those here who are Christians who love the Lord, here's what I ask you to do with this little packet of salt. Put it someplace where you're going to see it for the next several days. And when you do, take a look at it for a moment and say to yourself, I am the salt of the earth. That's what Jesus says. Despite all of your flaws, despite all of your fallenness, that's what you are. You're the salt of the earth. Carry this around with you and remember what Jesus said. And then sometime this week, tear it open. Pour it all out. All of it. On your chips, if you're partial to a few chips, on your spuds, or whatever it is you like to eat. Wherever you feel led to pour it out, and just say a little prayer. Pour my life out, God. Pour my life out. Wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, it doesn't matter. I am the salt of the earth, and I'm called to make a difference. Amen.